A little shorter because I have to run to something, but okay, let's just finish up our discussion of Arev. I think we were basically trying to work on two planes here. One is that there's a much, much bigger topic out there called Arev. Darsugi is all over the place, all over Shas, that deal with Arev. Of course, the sugya in Bava Basra, Kufayin Gimel, Amud Beis is very crucial. What the makor is, the habamina, that we discussed already. How quickly do we move to the arev? Whether the arev is only to produce the love? Whether the paradigm of Yaakov Ubanov is the source really for Arev, and obviously that's not a halva situation or a Kabbalah situation, more of a Yitzchayva situation. In any case, that's a very critical Gemara, Havamina Maskana, and it raises a lot of questions and issues. Mimisha Erza Ephra, Mimisha Erza Ephra Tchila, with Shibudim, of Kakos, Nechasim, all the issues in Bava Basra really kind of set up the topic, of course, the question of Asmachta, and left us with the three factors that we have identified. One is the Shibud itself, or the Yitzchayvus itself. The second is the Hana, and the third is the notion that an Arev can be kind of a Lova. And what we were discussing is that there are certainly Rishonim already, and then later Mefarshim, Poskim, who take a clear stand that one of these three, mutually exclusive to the other, is the Yisod of Arev, the Din of Arev. Again, often pointing to the Rambam in Hukas Mechira for Shibudim, pointing to other Makoros in terms of Kabbalah and Lova, and of course the idea that Hana would be a standalone Ki'ilu equivalent of Kesef as well. But what we were trying to explain is that becomes very difficult when you want to integrate all of the evidence, especially if you want to integrate our sugya together with the others, because our sugya clearly sees Arev as having the capacity, right, to create kinyanim. And again, we noted that already in the language of the Gemara, Meshabedle turns into Meshabedle v'kanya, and that's not so simple, especially if it isn't just a kinyan, but it's kinyan Kesef, which Kesef Shtar Bia needs to be. So the Rambam in Perikid Aleph Halacha Tesvav is inadequate, right, to convert into the Sugya in Kiddushin Dav Zayin, and therefore the Rambam in Perikei Hilchos Ishus, right, unless we, unless we revisit and reassess a little bit. And that's why we were trying to explain that, for the Rambam, the Hana factor and maybe even the status as a Lova, as a Makabel, right, is something that maybe flows from, or there's like a mutual relationship between seeing him as a virtual Lova, giving mamad or stature to the Hana as something which has legal standing and consequence here, and perceiving the Shibud as not simply a Havtaka B'Alma, but as something which is a Chalos, that can create a kinyan in its own right as well. And that's really like a very important yisod, which I think needs to be said for the Rambam. I should add that since a couple of people asked about Perek Chaf Hei Halacha Beis, I don't see any problem with Perek Chaf Hei Halacha Beis, but I think in discussing it with some people afterwards, I understand better what bothered people. Again, Perek Chaf Hei Hilchos Bava V'Lova Halacha Beis is where the Rambam speaks about Arev in the context of Halva. And the Rambam says, Im Amar lo b'shas matan mos, halveyu v'ani Arev, nishtabed ha'arev, ve'eno tzorech kinyan, v'chein im bezin oso oso Arev, nishtabed afu b'shil konam yado, kagon shei bezin rotzen ligvos min alova, v'amar lehem hanichu v'ani Arev lachem, ho v'yesh lo hana, sheminu bezin b'osa hana, Shibed Atzmo. So I think what bothered people relative to Perikei Yud Aleph Halacha Tesvav, I guess, was two things. Number one, that the Rambam doesn't say anything here about his skivus, very specifically. And number two, that he integrates the factor of hana into the equation, which he also omits in Perikid Aleph Halakha Tesvav. So that doesn't bother me at all. On the contrary, it works, and I think, very perfectly. Because, again, the whole point we were trying to make was that the Rambam in Perikid Aleph Halakha Tesvav is not defining Arev, and he's not elaborating on Arev. The Rambam's goal there is to establish that his chayvus itself is binding and can even create possibly a kinyan. Right? That's what the Rambam says here in Perek Yud Aleph. Second. Right? Hamechayiv atzmo b'mamon la'acher below tnai klal afa bishaloya chayiv lo klum hareza chayiv. Here the Rambam has a double chiddush. Number one, he's telling you that his chayvus alone is not an asmachta, and it can create a chiyuv. That's number one. Number two is that this can even take the form of something that looks like a false hodah. Right, the Rambam says, "Ketzad ha'omer la'edim hevo la'edim shani chayev l'ploni mano," which seems to say that I already owe this person $100. Shekasav lo b'shtar hareini chayev lach mana afapish ein sham edim o shomer bifne edim hareini chayev lach mana b'shtar afapish lomer atam edai hov omer b'shtar hareize kemish omer hevo la'edim v'chayev shalem afapish shnei modim v'edim yodim shelo hayalo etzlo klo sharei chayev atzmo. And then he adds, "Kimo sheishtabed ha'arev, ukazeho rerov agonim." So what I was trying to get from this Rambam is that even though this is the Rambam that's often quoted by, and I think very correctly, by the Mefarshim, is because this Rambam emphasizes the ischaivus part of arev. But the Rambam doesn't use the expression ischaivus when he talks about the arev. He uses the expression ischaivus when he talks about the category. And what he draws from Arev is the fact that the shibud of Arev, right, is such an intrinsic part. So number one, I think that the phrase hiskaivus and shibud are pretty interchangeable in this context anyway. That's number one. Number two, I think what the Rambam wants to prove from Arev is that shibud slash hiskaivus is not or can escape asmachta. Number three, that the shibud, his chayvus, is a linchpin. That's really what I was trying to say. It's not the entire story of Arev, and that's why the Ram doesn't mention Ahiyana. He doesn't mention any extended application here. It's that if there hadn't been a din of shibud slash his chayvus, whatever you want to call it, you know, which extricates itself from asmachta, that's if we didn't make the distinction, to use, again, the explanation that I was giving the other day, between a haftacha, right, and a chalos, a schaivus, or a chalos, shibud, right, then in Achanami, you couldn't have the halacha of Perikid Aleph, halacha tesvav. And you also couldn't have what you need in Arev to turn it into, when you need to turn it into, something more than just a shibud. So that, for example, if you want to say that Arev is effective, you know, to acquire karka, which is what the Rambam is saying in Perek Aleph Hilchos Bechira Halacha Vav, right? Because Halacha Zayin is where Shtar begins, right? And the Perek is about karka being niknes bekeseth b'shtar u'bechazaka, patterned on the Mishnah on Chavav and Kiddushin. So if you want to say that Hiskaibus, or that Arev, one second, could be a source for Kesef when it comes to Karka, so it's not enough, for the same reason that in Perikei Halacha Chafalef, meaning in Kiddushin of Zayin Omen Aleph, it's not enough to speak about a binding Hiskaibus. There has to be a Kinyan. And it's not enough even to speak about a kinyan that results from his chayvus or shibud. You need to say that kinyan is the equivalent of, or comes under the rubric of kesef, because any kinyan isn't effective in karka, only kesef, shtar, and chazaka. Just like any kinyan isn't effective in kiddushin, it's only kesef, shtar, and bia. Just one more second. So that's why I think the Rambam in Kedarko in different places is diffusing his discussion and treatment of Arev, you know, according to what's necessary. In Perek Yud Aleph, which is not about Arev, he's saying, the institution of Arev teaches us something about the difference, about what a shibud slash eschaivus legally is. But no one's telling you that that might be enough for Perek Aleph Hilchos Bechira or for Perek Hei Hilchos Ishus. I'm not even sure, and that's where we get back to Perek Chaf Hei Halacha Beis, whether that's enough for Perek Chaf Hei Hilchos Malva Volova, maybe to be the address, in a milva case. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We'll get to that in just a second. But what we are saying is that whatever those additional elements are in Arev, in those contexts, right, they are built off of, right, an 80%, a 30%, a 70%, I don't care about the number. We'll call it a 50% just to make it, easier to understand. A 50% context or framework, in which lemaisa, there's no asmachta, right? And I think more than that, there's a chalos called shibud or hischaibus, right? Which, then in a certain framework can turn into, something even more expansive than that. So getting back to Perek Chaf Hei, halacha base, it's true that the Rambam doesn't mention hischaibus there. They terms may be interchangeable, or it may not be necessary to relate to it. It's also true that there he mentions Ba'iyana, of course, because that's his weighing in on the Gemara in Bava Basra on Kufayin Gimel Amud Beis. That's where again it's implicit in Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Tesvav that's not an asmachta, but he just doesn't need to explain the Arev aspect of that. So again, it's enough for him to say about the case that he's really dealing with there that a matana is not an asmachta, right? But in Perek Chaf Hei, when he's quoting the Gemara, not just because he's quoting the Gemara, but because now he's dealing with this not in a context of matana, but in a context of arev, right? That he arev ad halva, that he really needs to emphasize, the hahi hana aspect. So that's why. I think he has it there. Now, the only question that's an open question is whether or not you need the din of Kabbalah in Arev, or it's enough. Now, is the Shibud Eschaivus part enough for the Arev of a Halva'a, or is that also inadequate, and you need Ki'ilu Kibel, in addition? That's an open question, I think, for the Rambam. Is it only when he deals with matana, right, that he needs to go further and say ki'ilu kibel? That, I think, is the question. So basically, to sum up, part of what we're saying now and part of what we're saying last time, we have basically the Rambam in four different places that we're analyzing. There are more. I just don't want to get too embedded in this, but we have Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Tesvav, which sounds like pure shibud. It doesn't even mention hana, and so on. Maybe there that's all you need, because all you need is for that ischaibus itself to be a kinyan. It doesn't necessarily have to be because of kesef. Then you have Perek Chaf Hei Halacha Beis, where he goes further and talks about the hana component more specifically, because he's talking there about arev and halva. I don't know whether also that's hahi hana is part of what converts it into kila makabel. I don't know if he needs kila makabel in lova based on that Rambam alone. Then you have Hilchos Mechira, which is midin arev, but it sounds like it's probably limited to a case of matana, although I can't be sure of that. I think Tamar's right about that. It says mana, tain mana leploni. But again, since it is based on our Gemara v'chein linyan mamona, and our Gemara is clearly a case of matana, and the Rambam usually knows how to allude to halva when he wants to. So I'm guessing you don't need a kesef shalhana in Hilchos Mechira, but maybe it's even in the case of Matana, or maybe it's only in the case of Matana that we actually say that this constitutes Kesef. That I'm not 100% sure about either. In our case, he certainly seems to limit it to Matana. Here he has Kesef Shulhana. And here he, interestingly enough, drops the reference to Arev. Doesn't mean, you know, that he... again, the Gemara says Midin Arev, but maybe this is the Rambam's way of saying, since it's Midin Arev, but it's plugged into Kiddushin, which has its own requirements, so, you know, it's not like... it's more than a classical Arev. So these are the four Rambams, I say, that I think provide the basis for this analysis. There was a question? Yeah.
You're saying that one of the possibilities
of
pointing to the Rambam is that Hana is overcoming the Asmachta problem.
Well, then I think, yeah, go ahead.
So in Masira, what's overcoming the Asmachta problem by Hana, what's overcoming the
Asmachta? It could be Matana itself is what does that. Again, this is an Asmachta question in general. Like, what is it that, as I say, there are two approaches to take, you know, to overcoming an Asmachta. Where otherwise you would have one. One, let's say, is we'll call it the more extraneous approach, which is, you know, you have a schaivus and you have a smachta, and then you just have to show, you know, that you are serious and that it isn't, you know, a guzma bi'alma or something that you're counting on not happening, as opposed to really realistically confronting, you know, the possibility and committing, you know, about what happened, you know, if it happens, right? So that's one way to look at it. And, you know, there can be different things that will, you know, dictate that you're more serious, that you are considering that possibility, and so on and so forth. What I'm preferring to say, I think this is a clear machlokas over Shonin, but what I'm preferring to say in the Rambam, especially if the hahiyana / overcoming asmachta part isn't just part of it, but is part of what transforms it from an enforceable haftacha, let's call it, into a, like, chalos, schaivus, shibud, that is a legal category, is that, you know, that's gufa, the line between an asmachta and a legally effective shibud, is that, you know, one is a promise, you know, and part of the problem with promises is that, you know, they're just that, they're, again, a promise is something that should be respected, right? But in the end of the day, you know, it's a more of an extraneous, you know, kind of commitment. And what the Rambam, you know, what the Gemara may be saying with Hahiyana is not just that, oh, since there's benefit, therefore he's serious, you know, and either way, you know, he's covered, because even if he loses his money, he can still hold his head up high and say, you know, I'm valued by the, you know, by the Malve, by the, you know, whoever the, you know, stand-in for the Malve is, so, you know, that you know, kind of neutralizes different aspects of asmachta. But what I'm saying is it's much more than that. It's, since there's hahiyana, right, so this isn't just a haftacha, but a serious, you know, ritzini haftacha that, you know, that is binding, but that it's a shibud, it's a hischaivus, you know, and so on. So what does that? I'm saying hahiyana does that. You know, maybe matana, you know, does that. That's really where we're coming from. Yeah.
So are these things like they're like mashlim arev, or they're part of the of arev?
So what I'm saying is that I think that they're part of arev. Certainly based on Perek Yudalef Halacha Tesvav, you know, I think what the Rambam is saying is that the shibud of an arev, that's Perek Hafei, certainly Halacha base also. The shibud of an arev is part of its hagdara, and maybe 70% or 90% or maybe 50%, I don't know. But what I'm adding is, you know, so how do you get from there to Hilchos Mechira Perek Aleph and to Hilchos Ishus? The answer is because if it isn't just extraneous, oh, we have a problem in your haftacha, namely it's a masmachta, oh, this is the answer to it, but it remains a haftacha. But rather, this is the way of establishing, you know, a deeper level of commitment, which isn't so far from Gomer Makni, you know, kind of, you know, which is why, you know, the Rambam's view on Kinyan Sudar is not irrelevant here, even though this isn't Kinyan Sudar, but it's not so far, you know, from those kind of ideas. So what I'm saying is these are not just extraneous, necessary hashlamos, they complement you know, but rather they really are part of the definition of Arev itself. Yeah.
Also, just to reinforce the idea that there's like some sort of kivel in Arev, is that the Rambam in Paragav of Mechir is pushing against the idea that you can have a kinyan without, you know, any ma'os or ma'is a kinyan.
Right.
And so in Vav, for him to say midin Arev is just more striking in light of the fact that his opening words of Paragav is there's no such thing as a kinyan ba'amira b'lvav.
Right, you can't have kinyan haftacha or right. Mira. Correct. So, so the idea that this is something more substantial, and it is, remember, it's kesef.
Yeah.
It, you know, as we said, it's the transition, it's the last halacha of kesef, because it is obviously, you know, an unconventional and mechudash, and it's an innovative case. But you know, it's it has to fit in with the darkei hakinyan of karka, just like kiddushin has to fit in with the darkei kinyan of kiddushin. So I agree. Okay, having said that, so let's also just talk just for another minute about the sugin makos, which we were talking about at the end. Also, now again, once we say this, again, this was Yosef's. One second, I want to make sure there's no. You know, give me 30 seconds just to.
So
did
right.
So, Ellie schlugged it all up?
Yeah, we're going to go on my share.
What? We're going to continue. We'll give you equal time.
Reddy can catch up what I said on the recording.
Okay. But the question is, does it even pay for us to continue, or it's schlugged up to such an extent that everything that's going to follow is just going to be a waste of time? Want to think about that?
Yeah.
Okay, let me know in like a minute. Yeah.
Just one last question on the previous on the discussion with Rambam.
Yeah.
So to me, correct.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I understand why the concept of a chalos hischaibus would be a prerequisite for the kinyan. But what's the mechanism by which kinyan takes place? I mean, we understand why the hischaibus.
No, so what I'm trying to say, that goes back to what I spoke about the other day, which I did, maybe should have repeated again, but I'm trying to streamline if possible, but which is, how do we look at, I think there are two problems. On the Hanoah level, you know, Hanoah as a commodity is an issue we've talked about a lot. And you know, if the answer is not a simple yes or no, in other words, every Hanoah, I'm just going to take it from two perspectives, right? Every Hanoah is like, you know, like the Lashon of the Ritva would say. Every Hanoah is the equivalent or maybe even the elemental, you know, basis for, you know, Mammon. If that isn't true, so then you have to figure out, you know, whether it's eclipsing or other things, right? When does a Hanoah that is associated with a particular phenomenon, when does that convert into kesef? That's one kind of question, right? A parallel question is what constitutes Kabbalah? Because typically Kabbalah means, you know, kishmo kain he, meaning somebody gives me something and I receive it. He physically gives it to me and I actually, you know, receive it in my hands or receive it in my reshus. That's already, you know, an extension, right? And that's Kabbalah. But, you know, what if, you know, I tell somebody, you know, that I want to expand my hagdara of what constitutes Kabbalah or Kabbalah for me. Let's say, you know, put it on a rock, right? Or throw it in the river or give it to my friend, you know, put it to some, you know, use, right, which is, you know, meaningful to me, or which I'm declaring is meaningful to me. So is that a Kabbalah? I mean, should we be so narrow in our Hagdara of a Kabbalah? Or of a Matan Mos? Or maybe that's goof of the difference, you know, between from the perspective of the Nosin and the perspective of the Makabel, right? So just like there's an open question regarding Hana'a, you know, when it is convertible into Kesef, I think there's also an open question regarding Nesina and Kabbalah when we have a more rigorous and more limited definition and when we have like a more open-ended or flexible definition, right? So what I'm suggesting is, I think this is what you were asking me, right? Is that the chalos, let's say shibud, you know, the hischaivus, which is more than just a haftaka, you know, absent or neutralizing asmachta, but is really like a chalos itself, has the ability, let's say, to play a role in one of those two areas. Because there is a shibud, you know, which is legally significant, so that is why I am considered the hana that I get, you know, which also allows it to be viewed as an asma. I'm saying this is one approach. I don't think this is a pshat in the Rambam. I think this could be an approach for some people. This is a convertible hana to kesef, you know, for that reason, you know, as well. That's what pushes it over the edge. But what I do think might be more true for the Rambam is the other way, and that is that whether or not this is considered to be a Kabbalah, you know, gufa depends on whether or not, you know, the hischaivus, the shibud that I have incurred, you know, is legally significant. If my saying I'm going to back up, you know this halva, or you know, if my input, you know, is what causes this matana, right, and that's considered to be significant, then for that very same reason, we can look at it as an extension of my Kabbalah and not merely as a hischaivus bialma. That's the idea that I'm trying to suggest. But again, it's for the same reason I was suggesting the other day, just might as well get back this back also, because I don't want to get too bogged down again in the details, but in assessing different Arev cases, like, is it possible that, you know, an Arev for a halva will express itself one way, an Arev for a matana will express itself the other way? Right? This is the question that we ask, like, why did the Rambam specify, you know, that what works in Kiddushin is dafka matana and not halva? And other Rishonim understood that the case is the typical case of halva. And then there were a group of, you know, the Talmud of Rajba, you know, seemed to say maybe it's only halva, not matana, right? Or it seemed to imply that, if you're going to make, you know, draw the line. And the Tshuvas Rajba, Ritva, and others either think it's equal or if that the relationship is opposite, right? That, you know, halva and kol shekein, matana. Meaning, there is the same question to think about, which is, if Arev expresses itself in different ways, you know, is it possible that the role that it plays, you know, what it morphs into, we'll call it, you know, what its virtual status is, right, depends on some of those, you know, cases and issues. So if I'm talking about an Arev, you know, who triggers, is responsible for motivating someone to give a matana, you know, then I might take one stand, and if it's an Arev in the context of a halva, it might be something else, right? That you might be, one might be a Kabbalah, and the other might be more of a Skyvus. You could argue about, I think, which one. Obviously, the Matana is a greater, if somebody's giving a Matana on my, just to please me, right? So, you know, that's, you know, the Hana part is certainly greater, right? And it's more clear-cut, you know, what's happening as a result. It's not just like, you know, he's going out on a limb and making a little bit of a, you know, of taking a little bit of a risk, right? It's the guy's giving him a matana. On the other hand, it's not, you know, that it starts off, you know, as a hischaivus and then it turns into something else, you know, which is typical case. In that sense, halva is much stronger. Halva and matana are stronger and weaker depending on your point of view, is what I'm trying to say. So, in terms of the mechanism of Arev. So is it logical that there could be people who would think that, you know, in Matana this is a Kabbalah, but in Halva it's only a Hischaivus, or vice versa, that in Halva it's a Kabbalah, because to be a Mekabel, to be another Lova, maybe is also easier to, in addition to having the stronger foundation of the actual classical Shibud or Hischaivus, I'm Hischaiv myself, and that makes me also a ke'ilu makabel, right? In addition to that, what I'm saying is, you know, being a lova is to create virtual lova, is that easier or harder than to create virtual makabel matan, right? I mean, you could say that they're the same. You know, virtual is good, virtual works, right? But what I'm saying is, logically, I could make the argument in either way, right? Because a lova, you could say, well, the whole thing about a lova is, you know, it's not mukhlat, and you know, it's all about the shibud. So I could be a virtual lova that doesn't be, but to be a mekabel matana, I really have to, you know, the car has to, you know, be in my driveway, and I have to be the one who's driving it. You know, otherwise, he's a mekabel matana, the guy who gets the matana. Or maybe it's the other way. Maybe, you know, the nature of malva and lova and shibudim is such that there's really only one lova, you know, the mekabel of the matan most, but a matana. So if I'm a nice guy and, you know, what makes me happy, you know, is being responsible for my neighbor getting a matana, that's a matana for me. I'm the mekabel matana for him. I'm saying I could just make the argument either way. So, you know, on the one hand, you have this note. The shibud, I think, plays a tremendous. It's not objectively. Well, it could be. This achila could be true, even if the question whether you're a virtual makabel was separate from the shibud. But what I'm saying is it certainly could also be affected by the relationship between the shibud and the outcome. Right? There's far more of a shibud in a lova case than there is in a matana case. In what respect? So. Does that answer the question? Yeah. Okay, good. So, having said all of this, so let's also talk just for a minute. I did the other day, but I just want to expand on it just for another minute, about the Sugin Makos and Dov Zayin Amud Aleph and the debate between the Ravid and Rashi. Again, the Sugin there is Eloi Vituvia Krevi De Arva, and the idea that being a Adam Hor Brachokim to the Malva Velova, but our Krovim to the Arev, right? So what is that all about? So what I mentioned the other day was that it certainly could be a Kurva issue. You have to deal with that in the context of Kurva. Just like in the Sugya and Shavuos, Havad Lalosif of Rav and Shmuel, you have to deal with on that level too. Like how arbitrary is the Havad Lalosif Allah? Are we dealing with really different Chalos cases or Shavuoses? It's obviously more appealing, you know, in the Sugya and Shavuos to say Havad Lalosif Allah. If we can say, you know, it's a different case, a different category, than just if it's, oh, technically not exactly the case that Rav Shmuel dealt with, you know, out of kavod for Rav Shmuel. I mean, there's a different Musar Haskel to be drawn depending on, you know, I think both are inspirational, depending on, you know, which position that you take. But just as in that sugya, there are two things to worry about. There are two things to worry about in the sugya in Makos, too. One is the hekef of Psule Korva. You know, even if you take the view that an arev is a secondary lova, or not a lova at all, but the fact is that sof, right, he might end up paying. And therefore, the more you look at this in terms of, you know, I guess, chashaker, certainly, even if it's institutionalized chashaker, you know, you're not worried about Moshe and Aaron, but, you know, you have to, you know, halacha is an equalizer, law is a great equalizer, and halacha certainly is a legal system that's a great equalizer. You know, we're not going to start, we don't want to call into question the cheskas kashrus of any member of Klal Yisrael, and we don't want, you know, Moshe and Aaron to end up blowing up in our face, you know, both points. So, but the more you look at it that way, so then you, what you might say is, you know, who really cares in the end of the day, you know, who the protagonists are in the Din Torah and who the, you know, the Eidus is about, you know, what we really, really care about is the motivation for, you know, institutionalized, but for Sheker. So, you know, maybe you still want to consider, like, actuarially, you know, like, how likely is it that the Arev is going to pay? So let's say, you know, let's say in 90% of the cases, you know, the Lova pays, and only 10% the Arev case. So, okay, am I going to lie for that 10% possibility because my cousin, the Arev, you know, that's something still to consider. But let's say we eliminated that, or we had a sufficient, you know, number for that, you know, that qualified it, you know, for this kind of a chashash. Let's say it was, you know, 60-40, you know, in the Arev Lova payments. You know, some societies maybe it's 40-60, I don't know. Either way, would it matter? The point I'm trying to make is that if you look at it in terms of Sheker, then you're going to look at this question, obviously, in a very different way. And then the status of Arev, the legal status, and Mamad of an Arev is totally irrelevant because sof, he's still in the payment picture. one way or another. But if we think that, the more we think that, you know, kurva is a formal psul, and that it does have to do with the, you know, content of the Din Torah, you know, and who are the protagonists, so then the idea may be that we're really, you know, perceiving the Arev as a lova in the case. And that, of course, is very crucial. So the debate between Rashi, again, the first are 2 days in the Gemara. Right? Originally, the Gemara thought, big deal. And then the Gemara said, what are you talking about? You know, Basar Arve Azal. So, again, the 2 days were about Kurva, or the 2 days were about Arev. But then that secondary argument between Rashi and the Ravid becomes very interesting and suggestive, because, you know, when we say that an Arev is a Makabel Matana, you know, and there's still this virtual issue that we have to contend with. Again, I was arguing in response to Shua's, you know, quest for or query about, you know, clarifying what I meant, that, you know, it could be Mechalek, and there might be the Shibud factor and how you look at it can play a role. But as we said before, this question of virtual Mechabel is an interesting open question anyway. So when it comes to an Arev being a Lova, right, it's also very possible, you know, to say, oh, he's going to be a Lova, but in the context of Piron issues, not necessarily in the context of Halva issues. Is that true or not? So maybe that's the debate between the Ravid and Rashi. Just as, you know, Mimi She'erza Ephra, or Tchila, or Kablan, or, you know, the difference between Matana and Milva, let's say, in either direction, could be the factor that pushes the status of Arev over the line, right? In other words, in this case, he's a Lova. In that case, it's just a Schaibus, or, you know, extraneous, you know, coincidental Hana, right? So, too, what we might say is, you know, he's not the, you know, is he the Makabel Hamos? He's not the person who received the Matan Mos. You know, who has the Shibud Aguf? Maybe the real Lova, in the end of the day. Right? But when it comes to, not Halva, but when it comes to matters of Piron, we're already debating Piron, that's when the Arev's status as a virtual Makabel, you know, kicks in. That could be the point of the Ravid. It's interesting, the Rishonim thought, oh, the Ravid is all about Palgina and Dibure, you know, and when you say it and when you don't, and therefore he wanted to limit the status of Arev in terms of the psul of psulei kurva. He wanted to limit it to cases of piron, because on the halva level it's easier to say palgin on diburin. Very possible. So I would say two things about that. Number one, gufa, whether that's true or not may depend on what we're talking about. In other words, it's easier to say palgin and dibure when you're trying to distinguish when the lova and the arev are separate from each other. It's even easier to say palgin and dibure when the nature of their hischaibuyos, or their chiyuvim in the case, we'll say, is different. And he's chayiv because he was a makabel matana, and he's chayiv because of some extraneous hischaibus. It's certainly much, much easier to say, you know, palgin and dibure. So it could be the Palgin and Dibure issue itself. And this goes back to what we, and whoever happened to be here in June last year, when we discussed, you know, Ed Shabbat Matas about the Kula and some of the parameters. We didn't do it, you know, fully, but, you know, certainly some of the questions we discussed. You know, when do you say Palgin and Dibure and not? Right? It's a Palgin question, but it's also a question about the nature, again, of these, you know, relationships. Right, when you have like two lovin, you know, when you have a lova and an arev, you know, when you have a malva and a lova different, when you say pagin and dibure, let's say you have two dine Torah that are somehow connected together, a halva and a mechira or a batana, you know, when you say pagin and dibure on that, when do you say pagin and dibure? So I'm only adding, not to make things too confusing, that the status of Arev could be a factor in whether gufo we say Palgin and Dibure. Okay, that's A. B, just to make the ha'ara, that for all the Rishonim, of all the Rishonim, the one who is, you know, more forceful about Pagin and Dibure is not necessarily the Ra'ivid. Okay, again, this is take it or leave it if you just... this has to do with, again, our discussion on Sanhedrin Daf Yud last year, and that is that the, you know, the Ra'ivid happens to think in the balance between two halachic factors that is a part, a, you know, a good part, but not the whole part, of the story of Pagin and Dibure, namely, Eidah Shebatla B'Tzasa Batla Kula and Pagin and Dibure. It happens to be that the Ra'ivid is very much, you know, an expansive Eidah Shebatla B'Tzasa Batla Kula person. Okay. I'll explain what I mean again in 30 seconds, but I don't want to belabor this at all. This is the debate between the Rambam and the Ra'ivid in Perek Yud Beis of Hilchos Eidus. You know, Ploni Rava S. Anybody remember? Shori. And you didn't remember because you weren't even here.
I was here that day.
You were here.
I was one day I was here.
What?
I was one day
Oh, there you go. Very good. Okay. So I'm glad it was memorable. So Ploni Rava S. Shori. Right, what is the what's the B'chal Machlokes in the Rambam and the Ra'ivid? What's that? The Rambam, the Ra'ivid says, I mean the Rambam says, Ploni Rava is Shori. So just like we believe, you know, on just like we believe, you know, on the Ploni, right, we're gonna say basically Migu de Chayli Ahai, Chayli Ahai. Correct? As opposed to what's the case? Ploni ba, Ploni Rava as Shori. I'm contrasting it to which case? Let's say Ploni Rava as Ishti, or Ploni Ravani. So the Gemara says about Ploni Rava as Ishti that we say Palgin and Dibure. Correct. The question is Ploni Rava as Shori, right? What do you? What the Gemara is also mistopic about that. The Gemara seems to be mechalik, but it's not clear in the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Yudam and Aleph whether we're mechalik, you know, in the direction of saying, you know, migu de chayli ahai, and therefore we believe the edim on both, right? Or the other way, we say edu shabatla miktasa, right? Batla kula, the exact opposite. Do we have it up here? Excellent, thank you. Right? Inu the misa bavera piatzmo arishabala bezin biomar shenigna vagazalo. And so on and so forth. Keep going. Ploni balishti huva achem starfim lahargo v'lo lahargo chen kiyotze bazeh, because we say palgina and dibure, right? Ploni rava shori huva acher mitstarfim lahargo she'enedam karov eitzel mamono. Since enedam karov eitzel mamono, so... Right, we believe the Edim on everything. So the right it says, right? Amar Avraham bin Amafarshim Atovim. Nice. Yeshim Afarshim Ploni Rava Shori Shagam Haroveya. Right? Eino Nerag. Fisha Edus Noga Al Shoro. The Lo Pagina Dibure. Vagam Al Shoro Niskavim Lahaid. Kashem Sheno Neman Al Shoro. Okay, so this is, and again, it's the Ravi Avad and the Ravid, and the whole, and it has to connect to the Siloi Batuvia and some cases in Gittin and so on. Without going into details, the point is this, that the Ravid had a very expansive view of Edus Batla Mitasa Batla Kula. He certainly didn't think it was limited to Nimsa Echad Mehem Karav Apostle, where you have a Gavra Eid Apostle, and therefore he contaminates, you know, the rest of the cot. That's certainly not the limitation. And in this, the Ra'ivid has some support from some Gemaras, certainly the Havamina, the Gemara in Bava Kamma and Baruba, which seems to apply sometimes in the Gemara in Gittin, the Yerushalmi Gittin, perhaps. There are some Makoros that imply that the din of Batla Miktasa, Batla Kula, applies not only when you have a Gavra, a Pasul in the cot, but where you have a Chefza Shal Eidus Psula connected with a Chefza Shal Eidus Kshera, that somehow the Chefza Shal Eidus Psula contaminates the other part. And we say Eidus Shabbat L'Miktasa but la kula on chefta shaledus, not just on gavra edim in the kat. So the Ravid went further with this, and not only in the cases where it seems that way, which could be neutralized by other rishonim, but he thought that the, you know, when typically we pretty much limit saying palginam dibure to situations where there's no shame edus whatsoever, like ploni ba al ishti, right, or ploni ravani, we say adam, you know, adam korovets al atzmo. So the way the Ravid earlier the Rimigash, but this is the Ravid's, you know, it's, he got the credit for it. The Ravid's take is that when you are made, there's a difference between edus nogea b'davar, we'll call it, and the edus baldavar. When you're made on yourself, or you're made on your wife, since ishto kagufo, so it's not edus bepsul, such that you'd be able to say, according to the Ravid, we should say all the time, edus shabatla, it's also batla kula. It's palginan dibure. Not because palginan dibure is such a powerful, ubiquitous, you know, pervasive concept, but because if you don't have shame edus, then you're always going to say palginan dibure. But wherever there's edus kshera and edus psul together, then you'll say edus shabatla mitzasa batla kula. So the point is that the Ravid's insistence in the Ariv case that we focus on the Piraon and not the Halva, which is attributed by some of the Rishonim Malatar, again, the whole discussion, the Balamor, and the Ramban and Mochamos, and the Ran and Makos, I don't want to go into the details, to issues of Palgina and Dibure, are not so simple, particularly for the Ravid, who himself is not such a huge Palginan Dibure. Palginan Dibure, in the context of Edus Kurva, for the Ravid, is not such a simple matter, is what I'm trying to say. I wouldn't reject it either completely, because again, you have to, you know, deal with the Yerushalmi and Gittin and other things, which I don't want to get into right now. But a better way, or another way, I'll just say, an alternative way to understand why the Ravid is limiting Arev Kurva, you know, or it being a protagonist la Indian Kurva to Piron rather than Hava, may be Gufa, our issue, which is the status of Arev as a Lova. And what you might say is that, you know, the Din Torah, when it revolves around the circumstances of the Hava, right? I did get, you know, a loan from you. It was, you know, this kind of you know, this amount, these were the circumstances, you know, that impact on the Din Torah. When it comes to Halva, right, the Lova Lechud and the Arev Lechud, the real integration of Arev into the Din Torah or into the status of Lova is much more acute in matters of Piro. That's what he's there for. So maybe that Gufa is part of that particular story. So this question of the general status of Arev as a Lova, and again, in parallel, you know, in the case of Matana, as a Mekabel Matana, or maybe to be Mechalek in either direction. That's, I think, a very important thing. There's another Gemara also worth looking at, and that is a Gemara in Gittin, Daf Mem Tesamid Beis, which I did not give you to look at. The Bava Basra, the Makos and the Shavuos I gave you to look at, but there's another Gemara here which I don't want to go into in detail, but just you should know that it exists, and that is the question of whether you pay the mode of payment or the quality of payment in karka. As you know, different tischaivuyos trigger different levels of payment. Idis, beinonis, tziburis. The question is, when you have an arev who's mischayev as a guarantor, right, for, you know, some sort of, let's say he signed up to be the nezek arev, if such a thing is possible. It sounds like in the Gemara there is such a thing possible. Can you be an arev on nezek? Can you be an arev on halva? That for sure. Can you be an arev on the ksuva? Well, you can, I mean, but might there not be differences between the way that Arev works? in these cases, that's exactly what we've been saying. Ksuva might be different from a regular hava, right, for reasons that are we alluded to in the earlier in the year and spoke of much more extensively a couple years back when we learned ksuvas. And that is that because typically, right, a halva and the shibud of a halva, right, Shmuel, is what? Is triggered by the matan mos, right? And the case of a ksuva, there's no matan mos, right? That's why the Rishonim in the beginning of Avalpi had such difficulty, you know, understanding how the shibud of a ksuva, you know, really works. So let's say you don't have property, you know, to be mishabed, you know, and so on. Because the ksuva is a, you know, is a forward-looking ischaibus. It's not halva. It's not, you know, one which was triggered by batan mo. So too, maybe the orev in a ksuva is different. But what I just want to bring your attention is that the sugya here in Ben Testament Base, which is discussing whether or not a ksuva, the piron of a ksuva is beinonis or ziburis. So the Gemara has the extended discussion. Well, if you're collecting from Yisomim, it's anyways going to be Ziburis, because all Piron from Yisomim is Ziburis. But the Gemara wants to know, what is the Piron if you collect from the husband? And then the Gemara tries to bring Rayas and Brysas, etc. So they have this one Brysa that they bring. Tashma Hanizakin, right? Shamin Lahem Be'idis, Balcho Be'Beinonis, Uksuvasisha Be'Ziburis. So the Gemara says, oh, that sounds like Ksuvas Isha Ziburis, it's against the Mandamar who said that that it's not. So Miman, Ilema Miyasmi, Ma Iriya Ksuvas Isha Filokol Haninami. Right, if it's Yisomim, then even the Nezikin is going to be Miziburis, because that's the rule. Elalav mi nay. And then it's part of the whole story about what, when you collect the Ksuva from the husband, right, what level do you pay? So the Gemara says, "Amar Vacha Bar Yaakov, Hocha b'Mayaskina, and Kagon Shenasa, Orev l'Nizke B'no, l'Balchov B'no, u'l'Ksuvas Kaloso." So we're talking about an Orev, and that's the Din Torah. B'hai Kidinei, and so on. Right, Nizikin u'Balchov, t'mechaim Gavu Yunami, Kimagvi k'mechaim Magvi, b'Ksuvas Isha d'Lachar Misa Gavi. Misa miman gavi miyasmi yunami kimagbi kalacha misa magbi. Then the Gemara says, "V'tepikle da'orav diksuva lo mishtabed, but lo mishtabed." Then the Gemara says, "Bekablon." A whole discussion whether you can have an orav diksuva who isn't a kablon, and a whole discussion whether or not an orav in Ezekin and an orav in Milva and an orav in ksuva are treated like the lova or not. Now again, those could be separate issues, but they certainly belong in our discussion. To what extent is a lova, I'm sorry, to what extent is an arev really a lova or not? In Shulchan Aruch, there's a whole discussion about arev and ksuva and its special status as well. The ksos in Siman Lamed Tes, Sif Katan Hei, has also a very interesting discussion regarding the question of kenunya. Right, the Gemara in numerous places has the discussion about, you know, sometimes we don't believe in our shibudim, you know, so clever Jews, you know, clever people, but, you know, maybe even more so clever Jews, I could say, because it's not anti-Semitic if I say it, right? You know, we'll figure out, can figure out ways of, you know, exploiting or capitalizing. In this case, it's exploiting because it's illegal on you know, complex halachic instruments or legal instruments. So typically, if a loveb, you know, admits that he owes money to a malbe, you know, of course we should believe him, right? It's a davar pashut, right? Asher yomar ki huzeh hodas baldin, you know, is kimeya edim dami. But if there are lekuchos and shibudim, or we'll just add to the mix, if there's an arev, right? So there's something in theory that a, you know, a twisted mind, you know, with a little bit of, you know, evil, you know, inclination and a little bit of ingenuity, you know, that can be a very powerful combination. So we call that a kenunya, right? Rechoshin le kenunya. Sometimes we're worried that the lova and the malva are in cahoots, right, and that they're going to take advantage you know, of the of other interests. It doesn't come out of their pocket, and then they'll, you know, they'll get together later and they'll split the, you know, the illegal profits, and so on. So basically, the Ksos raises the question: how come we are koshesh lekenunya when we're worried about the interests of a of the lekuchos? You know, but we're not, it seems like we're not koshish lekenunya when it comes to the interests of an arev. Right? Tzorach ladas, lama, this is a simen lama tesif katan hey, and it's a larger discussion in the poskim there. The tzorach ladas, lama ein agovim ilakuchos al pihodas halove mishun b'chayshinu lekenunya, v'gabi arev, im toin halove paraiti, right? We don't say koshin lekenunya. Avlim hoda halova shalo para. I'm saying again. Im toin halova paraiti ena gova mina arev. Avlim hoda halova shalo para. Right, gova mina arev. Kim bevor b'shulchan aruch simen kuf kavtes. Heich neman halova lachuv la arev as opposed to lekuchos v'nechush lekenunya. Very good question, right? You could answer it in terms of ubiquity. You know, maybe there's, you know, in the case of an arev, like how common and frequent is this? You could also say that an arev typically, you know, has a relationship, you know, with the lova, which would preclude, you know, us thinking that the lova would be so dastardly, like the arev is putting himself. You know, a lokeach is just somebody who buys the property, you know, from the lova at a certain point. But yeah. I don't think I said anything yet, but... Say again?
Does the lova have to pay back the arev?
Well, there are different models. I mean, he's supposed to. But, you know, you can always say he doesn't have money. Oh, you mean because when he gets his ill-gotten gains, then it'll be registered on the IRS, and then he'll have to give that to the arev anyway? Meaning he's clever and dastardly enough to pull off the kenunya, but not clever and dastardly enough to hide his assets from the IRS? Is that what you're asking? Was that all implicit in your question?
You're saying if the
RF
pays on its
behalf,
does he now have a different
role? So that, I mean, there are different models of RF. You know, I guess that depends on the arrangement between the RF and the Lova. Right? But again, if the, people can hide assets, pretty much. So you're saying, oh, there's no Metzius of Kenunya. Probably there's plenty of Metzius of Kenunya, based on the contract between them or other things. So again, one could have said, you know, it's the, you know, ubiquity of it, the frequency of it. One could have said that there, you know, is a special, when somebody, like, who am I going to be an RA for? Right? So, you know, both in terms of the extra Karas HaTov, like this guy put himself on the line for you. You have to be even... You know, maybe a little chaos, as I say, you know, he's some guy who wants your property, and you sold it to him, and you maybe not even know him, you know. But this arev, you got this loan because of the arev, and then you're going to, you know, pull a kenunya on the arev. Like, how evil would you have to be? What's the threshold of evil that we worry about as opposed to, you know, he'll make a fast buck, he's not thinking about it, you know, he might have financial pressures and so on. Just like, for example, Mashal Madavar Dome, you know, we, you know, you know, the question of you know, motive mikzas, of course, you know, ena demeis panav b'fnei balchov, there's a debate among the Rishonim, like when do we say ena demeis panav b'fnei balchov, and why do we say ena demeis panav b'fnei balchov, and what the scope of it is. But there is a view, you know, that, you know, if you have to look him in the eye, or he did you a favor, you know, then that's more of a reason to say ena demeis. So you might say, some people do say, you know, that, you know, that's a difference between an arev and lekuchos, right? But that's not what the Ksos says. The Ksos ends up saying something else. Ksos says that an arev is always in the category of eni yodea impraticha. Mishum dehava arev kamo eni yodea impraticha. Kivin devadai nischayev, afilo havale lemeida, nami chayev. As opposed to a lokeach, he's not eni yodea, you know, impraticha. He didn't take it. When a lokeach buys a property, you know, so it's not like he was mischayev himself, you know, to pay the shibud, you know, in the case the you know, the Loveh doesn't have any other assets. That is an implicit or a known, or should be a known, you know, buyer beware aspect of, you know, Kinyan Karka. That's still different than saying, oh, because it could happen and he should know about it, you know, and who he's choosing to buy from and whether he does his due diligence, you know. So implicitly, you know, he's signing up. If you look at it that way, then that's also any day in praticha. But, you know, obviously, it's much easier to say that the Arev is Mischayev, so he has this Kaibus, any odeya in praticha, you know, and if there's a Safek, so there's still a Chiddush in the Ksos. The Chiddush, we don't consider that to be implicit in Lokeach, although I think it's an obvious Chiddush, not one which one can't argue with, but one which makes a lot of sense. It's also that, you know, a bit of a Chiddush in Arev, meaning that's how we look at Arev, not just objectively, and it's also a bit of a Chiddush in Kenunya, right? So there's something to say about Lukuchos here, there's something to say about Arev here, there's something to say about Kenunya being kind of a Safek or Din of Enyodea in Praticha. And then he goes on to say, by the way, because of this, Aval Lokeach Vayorish Elon Ischayiv Machmas Atzmo Elon Nechosim Hudi Shtabed, meaning the Arev is a Chobos HaGavra. And the in the case of Lokeach, it's the Karka, which is Mishtabed. But then he goes on to say, oh, maybe there'll be Dalchei Nira, the Hainu Davke, Heche, the Matzina, the Mitan, the Para, Hamocher, Kodim Shalakacho, Alokeach. Maybe, you know, it makes a difference, even in Lukuchos, the timing. Like, when did he claim that he paid? Interesting. In terms of, you know, oh, by buying from him implicitly, maybe there is a kind of a skybus in some cases. It's a very interesting issue, as you can see. But what do I want to say about it? Just one word, you know, really. And that is that, you know, there could be a very easy answer to this question. Right? Although, again, a bit of a formalistic answer. And that is that the problem of Kenunya is a problem, you know, about some, you know, extraneous or separate, you know, third party. And the more you see the Arev, you know, as a virtual Loveh, right? So there's no chashash, you know, kenunya. You could say, oh, that's part of his chaybus, or that's legally what he is. It's just the whole question is again, unless you think the question is just a pragmatic question, you know, clever, you know, unethical people, you know, could exploit the RA. Well, you can always ask that question about a legal standing. But all I'm saying is the institution of kenunya is an institution which basically wonders about the collusion of Malva Velova on third parties. And it's very possible that an Arev Al-Pidin is not a third party. So this question, of course, impacts, as we have already discussed, on questions of Ribbis Ketutza. I mentioned the discussion of Tosis in Bab Metzia Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, right, regarding you know, halvas akum, where there's no din of ribbis. Let's say you have halvas akum and you have an arev yisrael, right? And it's a case where there's an element of ribbis. So that's a discussion in Tosis. The Gra points out that other rishonim disagree. And I think I mentioned that the Ritvan on Samach Tesamid based in Bab Metzia also discusses this in a slightly different case. The Ritva wants to know what happens in a Yisrael case. Hechad Amalei Malva Lelove, right? Tain Asara Dinarim Leploni, where the Ribbis Ketutza itself is the act of Arev, in other words. The Malva turns to Lova and says, I want you to be an Arev, I want you to tain Asar Dinarim Leploni, the Elvalacha Mana, the Nasan Alpiv. So is that considered like the Lova, right, is a Makabel, such that it's like, I'm sorry, like the Malva is a Makabel, such that it's like the Lova handed the Malva $10 or $100, you know, for aganatar, for the sake of getting this loan, right? So the Ritva says ribbis ketsutzahi. The afagav de lo osu zuze the yade, the malva, right? It didn't physically go in his hands or domain. Velo l'shlucho, it wasn't given to a shliach either. Velo para behen chovo, mikomako mashenasan ze alpiv, who knows say. Vafilo omar le zrok din alayam, here he goes further. The elvalach mana, hareu ki'ilu, I think I said this in the name of the Rush last time and I confused it. Hareu ki'ilu higia liyado, the chazar bizar kolayam. Kim sheze alpiv zarak. Vachem pirish rabbeinu b'shem rabo, this is the Ra'ah B'Shem Ramban. And it's... Okay. Yeah, it also appears in the Ramban, but in a slightly different formulation. But the formulations are interesting here also. So this is another issue that's interesting to think about. Again, whether or not Ribbis Ketsutza, which is Bein Halova the Hamalda, right, not only, you know, if there is a Lova Yisrael and a Lova Goy, which again... has its own questions, because maybe the halva is defined by the guy, even if he's a virtual love, right? Is he such a love that, you know, we perceive it as an intra-Jewish loan? That's an interesting question, too, right? How far do we go with this idea? But this is a slightly different one. Here's where the nesina, you know, the agarnatar, let's say, from the love to the malva, takes place by means of the din arev. And this is one of those ritvas, again, that doesn't work well with the ritva and kiddushin, unless we say something like, right, we were trying to say what Yosef was trying to say the other day about the ritva and balvasra. But this is a very important issue, and our rishonim who clearly disagree, and they think that this is not ribbis ketsutza. And the more you look at, you know, the role of arev as some more extraneous thing, and even pure, separate kesef shelhana, the more it falls away from the classical hagdara of ribbis ketsutza. And I already mentioned the idea of the arev, you know, and his role, and whether or not you know, the iser of arev in ribbis, which is not that of a lova, and you know, but also maybe more than the sofer and the edim and so on, how that fits in. I think we also mentioned. Again, this of course highlights again Zrokamon Aliyam. The Ritva's clearly taking a position here that the Arev is a Makabel, that's the whole point of the Ribbis Ketsutza. So, you know, for him to say that it applies even when it's, you know, Zrokamon Aliyam and there is no Kabbalah is seemingly controversial, which is why he adds that extra line, Hareu Ki'ilu Igia Liyado, the Chazar V'Zarko Aliyam. That's he's redefining Zarko Aliyam, saying that, you know, there's no such thing as Zarko Aliyam. Zarko Aliyam, Alpidin, is a Kabbalah, and then you can do whatever you want with it once you're Makabalit. Right. So it sounds like, but Lu Yitzuyar, we didn't look at it that way, and it's certainly open to question, then in Achanami, it wouldn't be Kabbalah, and therefore it wouldn't be Arev L'Gabi Ribbis, maybe it wouldn't be Arev at all. But this, as we know, is a huge, massive Machlokas or Rishonim, in Bava Metzia, in the Rishonim in Bava Basra, in our Sugya 2 in Kiddushin, the Rishonim weigh in on this question, whether it's Zrik Aliyam. So there are really two questions to consider, and one is whether or not the Ritva's description here doesn't neutralize it into Kabbalah, even though it doesn't look that way, or, as we've been saying, you know, it's not the Kabbalah part. By the way, you could, even if you think that Arev is a Shibud, or Hana, and not Kabbalah, you could still think that Zarek Liyam just doesn't qualify. But we're also trying to show that even if you hold that it is Kabbalah, Zarek Liyam might qualify. What's very reasonable to say that this Gufa is, you know, Haba Talia. A lot of the Achronim really like the Tlius in this particular case. Yeah?
When we say that the Arabic is Kilikibel, are we saying it's Kilikibel from the Malda, or is it actually Kilikibel from the Loka? And if it's from the
Malva,
for sure from the Malva?
I think so.
So. Is he sharing the loan from the Lova, or is it like a...
He too is like a Lova. In other words, when the Malva, at his behest, hands money to the Lova, to some extent, at some extent, it's like he handed it to him. But instead of handing it to him in his hand, he handed it to him in his extended hand, or his virtual hand.
So it's like they're both sharing that same love.
Yeah. They're both love and amor. Which is why I said, also, it's very fascinating to, both in Psulei Kurva and in Ilekin Lishtalum Mehai Lishtalum Mehai. Meaning, let's say you have two Arevs in a case. I think I mentioned the other day, right? Is that comparable to the rules of, you know, two lovin in a case? Or if you have an Arev and a Love in a case, and let's say, you know, there are questions of who, you know, has enough asset. Is that like two lovin in a case? So I think there are a lot of issues that are connected up with, you know, with this broader idea. Okay, so let us move on. Ooh. Okay, so let's tomorrow talk about Eved Kenani, you know, about the Rambam and the Rajba and the Ran, the omission in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Aleph, Halacha Vav, the Nosek Kelim there. Look also at the possibility that might be a Din of Zochin here, Rajba, and also at Rashi and Tosis Rid on Mem He, the little Gemara there on Mem He Omid Aleph. And Mem Hei, again, I don't want to spend so much time, so because I want to get to Chatzi solution. But the little Gemara here on Mem Hei Omid Aleph, where the Gemara talks about, you know, these guys, they're having a drink of wine together, right? You know, Mem Hei Omid Aleph. The Gemara is on the bottom here. Hanu Beit Trei Davka Shasu. Do we ever discuss this Gemara before? Davka Shasu Chamra Tutei Tzipi Bibavel. Artsuye Arts or Artsuye, that's the Gemara here on Mem Hei Omid Aleph to Mem Hei Omid Beis. And of course, look at the Mishnah Melech again, Hei Aleph. We're talking about Eved Kenani, whether Eved Kenani proves, you know, anything on the Kabbalah Nesina question. Also, Shnei Bnosayich L'Shnei Banai, or whatever that's called. So on Mem Hei, look at the Rashi and the Tosas Rid, at least. And on the Gemara here on Zion Omid Beis, just quickly, because that's the Mishnah Melech notes that after the two dots, boy Rava Shnei Benosecha L'Shnei Banai Bepruta, that little Shakavataria, and Rashi and the Tosas Rid on that, and the Mishnah Melech discussion, and Perkei Halakav, that same Mishnah Melech. Okay, we'll try to move quickly just to get through. So we'll have 1 o'clock tomorrow.